What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
IMUS, morning 6 to 8 on WBNW, 1120 AM. The following program is wholly sponsored and produced by Stu Taylor on Business, which is responsible for its content. The opinions and information provided on today's show are those of the guests and or their respective companies and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of this station. It is strongly recommended that all listeners conduct their own due diligence on all companies mentioned and or seek out the advice and counsel of a financial professional. The guests on this show may pay a fee to appear on the show and are not affiliated with the show in any manner. This is Stu Taylor on Business. Now, Stu Taylor.
All right, I hope you all had a great weekend as we begin another week here in earnest. Got a great show for you today. Later on in the hour, joining us will be Duncan Clark. He is the author of Alibaba, The House That Jack Ma Built. You want to hear this story? It's an amazing story. And an amazing story in a different sense as the welfare system that we have here. And I'm glad we're getting a lot of attention from a gentleman named Phil Harvey. He's the chief sponsor of the DKT Liberty Project, which is an advocacy group that raises awareness about liberty and freedom in the U.S. He's the author of a number of books, and he is the chairman and founder of the mail order firm Adam and Eve and chairman of the board of DKT International, which provides family planning and HIV AIDS prevention programs in 20 nations. The book is co-written with Lisa Conyers, the director of policy studies for the DKT Liberty Project. The name of the book, bet you thought I'd never get to it, The Human Cost of Welfare, How the System Hurts the People It's Supposed to Help. And it is published by Prager. Well, welcome to the show, Phil.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think this is a really important book because, it's difficult for me not to stay apolitical on this, but we've seen an erosion in values and handouts, I think, designed to for the elimination of one party, and I'm not asking you to make a political statement here, and it's all bent on illegal immigration. It's bent on handouts. People love freebies. They're difficult to turn down. How has our welfare system dramatically spiraled from even as recently as Bill Clinton's efforts to cooperate and to get rid of the welfare system as we have known it? It's worse than ever.
It is in part because a great many new programs have sprung up since that rather revolutionary step back in 1996 when President Clinton and the Republican leadership got together to quote-unquote end welfare as we know it. And the program that was restructured at that time was called Aid to Families with Dependent Children, and it was a really bad program, and I think everybody, Democrat and Republican, recognized that that program was kind of letting young women slide into a lifetime of life on welfare simply by having a baby, and that whole pattern was very destructive. And they changed that program to something called TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And the emphasis was on temporary. There was a five-year lifetime benefit. In other words, you couldn't be on it for more than 5 years. And there were requirements, and still are, under that now small program for job training and job placement and making a serious and concerted effort to find work. It worked pretty well, and this we tend to forget. That the complete restructuring of that program got a lot of young mothers off welfare and into work, and not only did they not complain about it, but the great majority of them, research has shown subsequently, found themselves better off, more optimistic about their lives. There were several interviews on NPR with women who had, in a way, been pushed off welfare and into work, and they said, it's tough. We have to juggle daycare and transportation and all of that, but not one of them wanted to go back on the welfare system. Once people start take control of their lives and their futures, they end up much happier. Meantime, many other programs have grown up around the restructured one, and we now have a very large program of food stamps, for example. Medicaid has gotten very, very large. The disability program has extended to what in some cases are fairly minor disabilities, so that the TANF, the restructured program, is now just a very small part of the total welfare picture. And the other programs do not have these temporary, that is, five-year restrictions, and they don't have any work requirements, generally speaking.
Phil, the consequences of everything going on in your site, food stamps, I don't know what the number is, about 48 million on food stamps.
That's right. Yeah.
More than 40% of the people don't pay taxes. This isn't a direct translation of what you talk about in the book, but it certainly could transform itself too. You got 92 million people who are unemployed, underemployed, looking to replace their jobs. Like looking at a national debt of 18 or 19 trillion, you got EBT cards. You got all of these Obama phones. Where's the breaking point here? You know, when you talk about the national debt, it could be 20, 22 trillion. Where's the breaking point here? This can't go on.
You mean just in terms of the cost?
The cost and when the bubble bursts.
I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. There's a good deal of argument and discussion about it, but since we own the currency in the world that is considered the most coveted and solid, there doesn't seem to be any visible limit to the amount of money that our government can borrow from our own citizens, from the Chinese, the Japanese, and others. But I certainly agree with you. There is a breaking point, and our debt is increasing every year, and it's a serious problem. The welfare program, all put together, is a big part of that. It now takes $700 billion a year to fund these welfare programs, which is considerably more than the entire defense budget. So it is a major budgetary issue. But our point in the book is that it is even the tragedy of the welfare system is not so much just what it's costing us taxpayers, but what it's doing to the people it purports to help. And that, we think, and we certainly point out in the book, is a really tragic problem, because millions of Americans now are caught in a kind of cycle of dependence and impoverishment. The welfare systems are designed in such a way that nobody can make much money. When they start to earn money, the benefits are cut off, sometimes rather unpredictably. The system is very complicated, and a great many welfare beneficiaries simply are afraid to earn any money at all. And, of course, that's exactly the opposite of what they want, and it's the opposite of what the rest of us want. So the system really needs to be fixed to encourage people to work rather than punishing them for working and earning money, which is what's going on now.
Yeah, it's the ugly side of what has resulted with unions when they were started, and the initial intent has never really been fulfilled. We're seeing that here. If you're a working mother, you're making $28,000 a year with two kids, and your total benefits can say be $60,000 a year. You know, you sell out. Who wouldn't sell out to save the soul of your family? And you indicated that most people who are on welfare would be happy working on their own. What else did you find out in terms of the common traits of more than 100 welfare beneficiaries that you whom you interviewed for the book?
Well, one of the encouraging signs was the fact that a great many of these folks are working off the books. That we found proof positive. People can say they want to work, and they may not mean it, but if they're actually out there making money, they have to do it in cash, and they have to hide that income from their caseworkers. But frankly, even though it's against the rules, I found it very encouraging. At least half the people that Lisa talked to, half the welfare beneficiaries, were earning money on the side and just not mentioning it to their caseworkers. So that means they do want to work, and they are working.
We're going to have you come back. Can you stay for another segment here?
Sure.
All right, Phil Harvey, really an important book, and I certainly endorse what Phil Harvey has written about. It's the human cost of welfare, how the system hurts the people it's supposed to help. Prager is the publisher. Stay with us.
U2 America TV, featuring original live programs created with you in mind. Engage with shows through social media and the U2 America app. America Trends with Dr. Gina covers the trending topics of the day and allows viewers to interact with the show. Sully's Biz Brew is business with a barroom slant, delivered with a twist. Visit U2America.com to find a channel near you. U2 America, red, white, and you.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Going on now at Guitar Center? Get a free gift card with the purchase of select guitars, keys, and drum kits. Grab the gear you need to make music and use the free gift card to outfit your rig with your favorite accessories and add-ons. Purchase select acoustic or electric guitars over $399 and get a $40 gift card. Or purchase select acoustic or electric drum kits or keyboards over $299 and get a $30 gift card. Guitar Center's free with purchase event going on now, in-store and online. Offer valid for regularly priced items only. See store for details. Restrictions apply.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
BizTalkRadio.com.
The Financial Exchange, weekdays 10 to noon, 1120 a.m. WBMW.
This is Oliver North, host of War Stories on Fox News Channel and author of American Heroes in Special Operations. I just want you to know, Stu Taylor is a great American patriot. Don't miss his show.
All right, we now return with Phil Harvey. The book is written by Phil Harvey and Lisa Conyers, The Human Cost of Welfare, How the System Hurts the People It's Supposed to Help. Terrific book, and it's, I think, a great awakening for people who are just suffering from the naivety who think that, social justice is defined by giving handouts. It's actually the converse. It degrades the morality, the basic values that a person has, and suppresses any incentives. And that was maybe one of the two principal findings of the opinions of all of these welfare beneficiaries. And you started to maybe enumerate one or two others, Phil. What are they in terms of what your research showed?
Well, I think what we found most consistently was that welfare beneficiaries hate the system. They don't like it. They don't like being dependent. They don't like being on welfare, but they feel trapped. We heard that term quite often, trapped in the system. Part of that is because of the cutoff, the threatened cutoff of benefits that I mentioned earlier. A part of it is, frankly, simple inertia. We all tend to get into a habit and get into a rut in life, and that's just as true of welfare beneficiaries as the rest of us. And we keep on doing what we've been doing. But the problem with the system, I think, and Lisa thinks, is that it is so bad at getting people into work, into jobs, out of the system. The welfare system tends to turn people to other welfare programs. One of the people who was interviewed, a guy named Angel, was really angry about this. He said, you go to the welfare office, they should post jobs. There should be jobs openings listed on the wall, he said, but they don't. The bulletin board has, need food stamps, help with Medicaid. The whole system is designed to expand the welfare system, and none of it is designed to direct people and help people get out of the system and into work, and that is a tragedy.
And you've defined the problem artfully here. That's the problem. What are the recommendations that you and Lisa make in the book about how to, if not resolve it, but make the system work in a much more productive way? What are the solutions?
Well, very strongly we feel that welfare benefits should be tied to work in some ways. There is a very optimistic part of our welfare program called the Earned Income Tax Credit, the EITC, and that is the one program that is working reasonably well, because what it does is top up the salaries of low-income workers, and it makes work more attractive. It has become a very big program. The system is awkward and flawed in many ways, and it needs to be fixed. But the idea that the government programs should make work more attractive by topping up salaries of people who do work, we think is absolutely the right direction. And that program should be expanded and fixed. One of the things wrong with it, for example, is that you have to have a baby or two kids before you really become eligible for any benefits. We don't see any reason for that. A person who's working on his own or a married couple without children ought to be able to benefit the same way as a mother does or as parents do. And there's some other things wrong with it, but it's the right idea. In other words, make work pay, because people who are working are happier, they're in control of their lives, their morale, as you suggested, is greatly improved, and they're working their way out of the system, which means that this program can begin, that is, the overall welfare program can begin to phase down a little bit instead of continuing to grow.
And I know, obviously, UI and just about everybody listening understands that there are needy people. This isn't a discrimination issue, pointing the finger at everyone who doesn't have a job and can't provide. There were those who were disabled. There are programs like the Supplemental Security Income Program that will help out. Talk a little about that and maybe some other programs that people can turn to.
Well, I certainly agree that we need a safety net for those who truly can't work, that circumstances do sometimes dictate that. SSI, the supplemental security income that you mentioned is available for those who are considered disabled and are not covered by the bigger insurance program. Of course, there's another acronym for that. It's SSDI. But we have some serious problems with disability programs as well. In the first place, a great many disabled people want to work. The Americans with Disabilities Act specifically says that businesses and employers must do more to accommodate the disabled so they can work, and yet these programs, SSDI and SSI, the welfare programs for the disabled, are doing even less for the disabled who want to work than is true generally of the other programs. In other words, the people on SSI feel more trapped. For one thing, they can earn even less money before benefits are taken away. For another, the benefits tend to be very generous. This is even true for disabled veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's really tragic, because these young men and women are in the prime working years of their lives, and what we tend to do is say, we'll give you enough money so you never have to work, and they want to work, and they can work. But the program doesn't encourage that. Very few people who go on to these disability programs ever get off them. The whole category of disability benefits is kind of the problem is the general welfare problem exaggerated, because the fear of losing benefits is even greater, even for people who are fully able to work and do certain kinds of jobs, for example. Employers do accommodate. They have to accommodate under the law.
Right, and on that note, I want to thank you for a most informative session, Phil Harvey, the book, The Human Cost of Welfare. How the System Hurts the People It's Supposed to Help. Get a copy of it. Open your eyes. This is Stu Taylor. Thanks, Phil.
You bet. Thank you.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975. For your free health insurance quote, call now. 800-659-7975. 800-659-7975.
Do you owe $10,000 or more on at least two federal student loans? Then you may qualify for new programs offered by the Department of Education. These programs can reduce your interest, lower your payments, and possibly qualify you for loan forgiveness. If you have $10,000 or more and at least two federal student loans and currently not in school, you may qualify for one of these programs. Call now to check your eligibility. Student loan advisors are standing by to help you determine if you qualify for these new programs. They can help you reduce your interest, lower your payment, and even forgive a portion of your student loan debt. Take control of your financial future. Make this free 5-minute free call now to Nationwide Student Loans and learn how you can reduce your student loan debt.
800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588. 800-439-1588.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, Call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
BizTalkRadio.com.
You're tuned in to Money Matters Boston, 1120 AM WBNW.
This is Martin Fletcher. I'm a special freelance correspondent for NBC News, and I've just done an interview which I enjoyed very much with Stu Taylor.
All right, we're back with an amazing story, and in a sense so typical of our times, but maybe not to the extent that this story is a tremendous breakthrough in exhibiting how rapid technological growth can be and how instantaneously can transform a small company into one of the largest ones in the world. We've seen many cases of it. Here to talk about it is someone who knows very well, Duncan Clark. He's a former Morgan Stanley investment banker, speaks Mandarin fluently. He's lived and worked in China for over a couple of decades, and he heads a team of more than 100 at BDA China, the investment advisory firm he founded in Beijing. He has written a book here that an amazing story, Alibaba, the house that Jack Ma built, and it is published in the hardcover by HarperCollins, the division of HarperCollins, CCC. Duncan, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I mean, I opened up here by by saying how rapid the growth of certain companies can be. We've seen it. You know, we've seen Apple, we've seen Facebook. I mean, it could go on and on with companies that have reached new heights. But to think that a company, at least from the perspective of the American mindset in China, could become such an international powerhouse in such short order is extraordinary, especially when you consider the guy who built it, as the subtitle says, the house that Jack Ma built. Before you talk about the book, and you can perhaps combine that element of it into your response, a little bit about who Jack...
Hello? Hello? I lost you. Hello?
They say eating fish can make you smart. But eating sustainable seafood from Big Y World-Class Market can make you even smarter. Because it's not only good for you, it's good...
It's Duncan on. Okay, Duncan, are you there?
Sorry.
Maybe you could respond to that.
Absolutely. So Jack is an unusual tech entrepreneur because he's not really a tech guy. So he understood the power of technology. He was really one of the first in China to see the power of the internet. And he kind of used that to really build this, you know, huge company that you described. It's really a combination of Amazon and eBay and YouTube and Uber and PayPal and all into one. And so, you know, he came from really very modest background. I think this was your question before we were cut off, that, you know, who is the guy? He was an English teacher. You know, he struggled. He struggled in high school, and he barely got into college on his third attempt. And wasn't frankly in a great college, but he really understood from where he was born, which is a couple hours west of Shanghai, like the power of business. And that part of China, sort of eastern China, is where lots of small, medium-sized, you know, companies, small factories and so on were making lots of stuff, but they didn't really know, frankly, how to sell very well outside China and even within China because they were just good at manufacturing. And so Jack saw the opportunity when he launched the company back in 99 is to help these factories effectively sell their stuff online. And Alibaba was actually his third company, so he had two before that. But he knows a lot about failure as well as success.
Yeah, and he utilized a lot of the gifted skills that we have, which aren't, as you talk about in the book, purely technical in nature. I mean, I'm a non-tech guy, and you think of a company with this prowess, you'd think the guy behind it was a Steve Jobs. He's not. And yet he had the ability to put all of this together. I mean, some of the ramifications of this are obviously are highly political, considering it's in China. It is almost a contradiction to China's socialist and an oppressive nation that he could do this, and at the same time, getting a company like eBay out of the picture.
That's right. I mean, you know, obviously on the internet, and I write a lot about this, like how did the internet come to China? Because you think about the internet, it's all about, you know, distributed information, challenging, you know, incumbents. But actually, Jack was able to build this business kind of under the noses, if you will, of the government. But now he's kind of the support, ultimately, of the government, because China's shifting its economy away from the kind of made in China one that we think of, where we buy all our stuff. And in China, that means living. And I've lived through that, you know, pollution, whether it be water and air and so on. Moving from that made in China past to the kind of consumed in China future, where they're actually, it's the Chinese consumers that are really in the driving seat. And that's what the government actually wants, because economic growth, as you've been reading and hearing, is slowing in China. We've had this massive boom for the last 20 years, but it's beginning to ebb. And it's kind of natural that, you know, China cannot keep churning out stuff, particularly like the rest of the world cannot buy any more of this stuff. Right? So Jack is useful in a way to the government as it tries to rebalance the economy away from this production towards consumption. And that's not going to happen overnight. But Jack has made it easy for people to buy online. And the most important thing that he brought to consumers in China is trust, because people don't really trust each other very much in China, because it's difficult to, you know, you're not sure what you're buying, what you're getting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the counterfeit products. How is that handled by Alibaba? Because it's a major problem.
It is. But, you know, one thing, you know, there will be people trying to sell fakes, and there will be, you know, fraudulent, all that, but transactions. But Jack and Alibaba really, you know, they're really good at handling that. So if I was to buy something today, like I wanted to buy a, you know, brand of something, and I realized it was fake, or I bought something that was broken in transit, they would be on it so fast. I mean, you have like a little chat function on your computer, on your phone, where basically the merchant that's shipping it to you is saying, did you receive it? Everything okay? Anything I can do? And anytime you open a package that you buy from them, there'll be stuff in there, additional things, you know, little tchotchkes or gifts, you know, because there's so much competition. It's different from Amazon. You know, Amazon buys stuff and sells it to you. Alibaba just is a platform for these small merchants, like these factories and, you know, guys I described, to sell to you. But they have to compete, you know, with literally hundreds of thousands, or sometimes millions of others. And so they're really giving you great service. And that's new for a lot of Chinese. When they went to the store in the old days, you know, they'd line up for products and it wasn't very good. So they really became consumers online, many Chinese.
Joining us, Duncan Clark, the name of the book, Alibaba, the house that Jack Ma built. What are the ramifications of some of the major corporations that were started here in the United States in terms of the effects? You know, I mean, we think about Amazon, we think about Yahoo, we think about Facebook, we think about all these amazing companies. What do you think will be the ultimate effect? Will it be a positive one or a negative one in terms of what we're doing and what we see Alibaba doing and taking over an industry? If indeed you can define what that industry is, because it's so all-encompassing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, there's winners and losers of all these companies, right? There are people who lose their jobs because, you know, if you think we've been talking a lot about Uber and so on, what that means for taxis, but there are a lot of jobs created, you know, and so Alibaba actually, with another company, invested in a company which is much bigger than Uber in China. So they're, you know, they're actually part of that disruption. And that raises, you know, eyebrows and raises fears. So these companies have to, you know, be very careful in communicating a positive message and actually contributing to, particularly in China, the kind of social fabric. Because, you know, China's been through massive urbanization, as I mentioned, and, you know, pollution and so on. So China's looking for these companies to sort of help contribute at the same time as they're actually shaking things up. But, you know, we're seeing these issues in the U.S. Just think about what we're going through with automated cars coming and so on. And, you know, this stuff is global, right? And the technology is global. It's how it gets adopted in each country and how the governments sort of adapt to that. So I think, you know, Alibaba increasingly is going to be playing in the global market in some of that debate. Because, you know, if something gets popular in China, it can have a global impact, even if they don't launch it elsewhere. Because, you know, the sheer number of people online, we have several hundred million people buying on Alibaba websites regularly. So they're already a global player without leaving China. So I think it's interesting when we talk about these U.S. companies that you mentioned. How do those guys interplay with China? A lot of those companies are blocked in China, for example, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, because that's seen as sensitive. Others are not blocked, but they've struggled, like eBay, for example. Alibaba is famous today in China, really, because they beat eBay. They forced it out of the market. And so how did he do that? It's this idea of, like, Chinese entrepreneurs versus these Silicon Valley entrepreneurs. It's kind of a squaring off.
We see different mindsets, how the Asian mind works versus the American businessman's mind. Many, many books written about that. Well, how would you describe the contrast of styles between Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Ma?
Well, it's interesting. I've been watching recently. Mark Zuckerberg's been learning Chinese, and he started to make speeches. But I can say one thing. Jack's English is much better than Mark Zuckerberg's Chinese. But he had a head start as an English teacher. But, you know, hey, A for effort. And he's actually he's gaining some fans in China for his commitment, Zuckerberg. But it's very difficult to bring a company like Facebook to China. He's going to not give up, Zuckerberg. But in a way, like for Jack to come to the U.S. is easier because the U.S. is more sort of open market. He's been setting up offices all over. He's in the West Coast. He's now in D.C., in New York. So Jack, I think, is an international person. I mean, I think one thing to think about him is that he always, you know, from a young age, practices English by going up to tourists on the streets of his hometown. He got investment from overseas. He first discovered the Internet in Seattle, you know. So he's not the typical Chinese entrepreneur.
And all right, we're going to ask you to hang on. We've got a break coming up, and sure. You've been kind enough to stay over for the next segment.
Oh, so happy to.
We'll be right back. An amazing, I mean, truly amazing story. Duncan Clark, Alibaba, the house that Jack built.
I recently received my doctorate in astronomy. So mapping trans-Neptunian planets is a cakewalk. But tracking the trajectory of my financial future, not so much. Fortunately, I've got TIAA. They helped me figure out a long-term personalized plan for my finances that I'm, well, over the moon about.
See how we're helping those who do good do well at the new TIAA.org. TIAA, created to serve, built to perform.
If you have sore joints, discover a breakthrough in joint health. Cosamin ASU. A unique patented formula, Cosamin ASU goes to work fast on a cellular level inside your joints. Its active ingredients are shown to inhibit specific enzymes that break down cartilage as you age, helping protect the joint cushioning cartilage important for comfortable activity. Try Cosamin ASU at Costco.com and other fine retailers.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving. But my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call. But I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off. Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, night time heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
BizTalkRadio.com.
Real life stories of the Legal Exchange. Sundays 2 to 3, AM 1120, WBNW.
This is George Will. I've just had the pleasure and sheer fun of an interview with Stu Taylor. Hope you'll listen.
All right, one of the more amazing stories out there, the growth of Alibaba. I remember when I first heard about it, I'm a media guy. I'm in the media, and it suddenly just exploded. And I said, "What? How can this be possible? What is this? What's Alibaba?" Well, I think everyone knows now. The name of the book is Alibaba, the house that Jack Ma built, and it's published by CCC, the author, distinguished guest who's actually splits his time between China, the UK, the US, West Coast, and East Coast. He's a busy guy, Duncan Clark. And since you talk about it, Duncan, I wouldn't bring up a subject that I thought would be injurious or painful, except if someone writes about it, I'll bring it up. You've never been an employee of Alibaba, and yet you had an opportunity to invest and come out of this making a lot of money. Talk about that while you're taking your aspirin.
Yeah, so I actually met Jack and when he founded the company just a few months after, back in 1999. It was just 20 people in his apartment. And I helped them in the early days. They asked me to help with some international stuff. And I had my own company, my consulting company. And I thought, well, I'll keep that on the side. And so I worked part-time. They gave me the opportunity to buy some shares. And, I had to do that in a couple of years. And I didn't think about it. A couple of years later, the dot-com crash had really, as you remember, cratered many companies. And then it came to, do I write a check for $50,000, which I didn't really have to buy shares in this company. I said, I can't do it. Didn't do it. That became a $30 million mistake at the IPO. But the great thing about writing this book is I had to interview people who lost a lot more. So even the investment bank Goldman Sachs had at one point, for a $5 million investment, they sold it for $20 million. If they held on, they would have made $120 billion. So I met, it's good to meet people who've suffered worse than you. So it was kind of cathartic.
Mayor, misery loves miserable company.
What's that?
Misery loves miserable company.
Exactly. So yeah, it's kind of a first investor club or first wives club kind of deal. No, because, don't underestimate this guy. I mean, many people, I never really underestimated him, but I never really understood how far he could go. I mean, this English teacher who had this sort of band of brothers and sisters, actually a third of his co-founders were women. He's different in many, many ways from the tech guy.
Yeah, he is. And you talk about how far he can go. He's not through. What are the designs that Alibaba has for the future as they just expand their tentacles and their reach?
Exactly. He's already so dominant. Alibaba is so dominant in the Chinese e-commerce market, much more even than Amazon is here. So he knows he has to expand into new areas, and two that he's really been focusing are finance and in entertainment. So in finance, what they have, Alipay, is like PayPal, and more than that, actually, plus online banking. you know, he's bumping up against these big Chinese government-owned, state-owned banks. But giving the kind of consumer service experience that we like on the internet, in e-commerce, he's bringing that to banking. But he's also targeting the entertainment sector, both in China and in the U.S. He's been investing in Hollywood. Alibaba Pictures has set up shop there in Los Angeles. So he has big plans to become a global player in the media industry as well.
You touched upon this early, but I think considering it's China, it maybe is worth more of an elaboration. And I'm talking about his relationship with the Chinese government. And yes, you did mention that Chinese has certainly encouraged entrepreneurial pursuits and reaching the everyday population in order to purchase consumer products and services. But could you give something that's maybe less simplistic in terms of his relationship with the Chinese government and censorship?
Absolutely. Well, firstly, in terms of censorship, you're right. I mean, you know, a lot of websites have been blocked from the West. You know, talk about Twitter and YouTube and all that, Facebook. You know, you travel to China, you won't be able to get online unless you use some technology. So content, news, you know, social, that's all sensitive and often censored. But there are, by the way, really large domestic companies that fill that gap. Alibaba has really started out on the e-commerce, which is less sensitive. But as he's moving, as I mentioned, into areas like entertainment and news, of course, he's bumping into these sensitive areas. So the question is, I mean, Jack famously says, you know, fall in love with the government, but don't marry them. You know, if you marry the government, you know, he's going to lose the touch, you know, with customers. But look, it's a dance. He's basically constantly trying to figure out how can the government tolerate him? How can he be close to the government without actually kind of having to do their handiwork? So it's never easy. These Chinese internet entrepreneurs face a whole level of dealings with government that don't exist here in the U.S.
You know, they say, it's in a sense, it's easier to make money, but you got to be able to preserve it when you get it. And holding on to a company that is so huge, and we could cite so many of them here, and having it be successful as it continues to grow with the risk of overextending is amazing. You know, they said Walmart has to grow 15% a year. Well, it isn't. And you see a lot of the stores close. And I know this isn't a simple answer either. When you're looking at $15 an hour, you're going to have to lay off employees. But, and you look at China's negative growth. I don't know what the number was. I think I heard it was 9%, and it's going down and going down significantly. What are the risks that lie ahead for Jack Meyer, and how does he weigh those risks while he's looking to expand into other areas? It seems to be just an overwhelming task.
Yeah, sorry. He actually is looking to help in things like healthcare because the Chinese population is aging. He's having to basically find new areas that are going to match the new China. So, for example, getting into pharmaceuticals. He can no longer rely on this low-cost labor. We talked about, you know, the economy grew by so much in the past because it was just, you know, labor coming into the cities and, you know, cheap wages. That's all over. You know, China's shifting. And, you know, in a way, like, Alibaba needs people to spend more for it to be successful. And why do people spend more is when they save less. Chinese save huge amounts of money for their health care, for their pensions, their education. So the government has to do a lot of work to improve that system. Right now, people put a lot of money under the mattress. But they want Chinese consumers to spend more, and that's going to help Alibaba. So he has to do what he can to help, if you will, the government with its own job, which is making people save less and spend more. So it doesn't happen overnight. So it's a pretty tricky transition, but he's determined to, you know, be right there.
All right, a quick closing comment you'd like to make. We only have about 10 seconds, 15 seconds.
Yeah, no, there's hope for English teachers and, you know, liberal arts. I think it's not all about technology. Technology for everyone. That's what Jack shows us.
All right, well said. A great book, an amazing story. Alibaba, the house that Jack Ma built. Is written by Duncan Clark, who was kind enough to join us for an extended period this morning. Duncan, thanks very much.
Thanks.
Loved hearing what you had to say. Good luck with the book. And I want to thank everyone for listening. This is Stu Taylor. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. BizTalkRadio.com.